When did we see you as a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you?" And the king will answer and say to them, "Assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these my brethren, you did it to me." Then he will also say to those on the left hand, "Depart from me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels." And so, here the Lord's being very, very specific with us. When we take care of somebody that's in this position or condition, he says it's the same as doing it to me. And so it's a very serious matter that we take care of the less fortunate and the needy. Israel had got to the point where they didn't even care about their own brother, let alone a stranger, somebody else from a foreign country. We looked at Amos a couple weeks ago, how they would sell their brethren for the price of a pair of sandals. That's how little they thought of each other. But they would buy and trade their own brethren. Again, in Isaiah, the first chapter, verses 16 and 17, God was specific with them and told them, here's why you're being punished. You did not take care of the fatherless and the widows. And we looked at the passage in James chapter 1, that pure religion and undefiled religion is to visit the fatherless and the widows, take care of those people that are in need. So it was interesting that God posed three questions to Israel here in chapter 10. Down in verse 3, he asked these three questions of Israel. He says, "What will you do in the day of punishment and in the desolation which will come from afar? And to whom will you flee for help? And where will you leave your glory?" All three of these things we've looked at that Israel was very arrogant and very proud and prideful in. These three areas, and God just simply asked them, "When I come down upon you, what are you going to do? Who are you going to turn to? And who's going to take care of those things that you put such value and such trust in?" And the obvious answer is, he leaves there in verse 4, says, "Without me, you have nothing." And so again, he reminds them that they had left God. I thought it was interesting also in tonight's lesson in chapter 11, he begins talking about the stem of Jesse and the rod that's going to be raised up from the stump. And he starts talking about the character of this person. We know that person to be the Messiah, Jesus. He talks about the character of this person, and then in contrast to the character of the leaders of Israel at the time. And so he shows a contrast to the people. Here's what you guys are, and I have no choice but to bring punishment against you. But there's a coming kingdom where we're going to have a new king. We're going to have a new leader. And here's the characters and qualities of Jesus. And we'll get into those more specifically as we get into the lesson. But he also, as Jerome pointed out in all of his lessons, God always shows a glimmer of hope. You know, here's this punishment coming on you. Here's these things going to happen to you. But it's not going to be complete and total annihilation. There's always that glimmer of hope. As Isaiah puts it, God has his hand stretched out. He's reaching out to help us, to pull us back. Why is God not done with Israel? Yeah. Because he's not done with their promise, is he? As we look before, the promise, the seed promise, the one that all nations are going to be blessed. Jesus was coming through the nation of Judah. And so he was not completely done with Judah. And so he had to bring them back, bring a remnant back, so he could still fulfill his promise. And so we'll see a lot of that through the book of Isaiah. Is anything else through the three chapters that we covered tonight before that you want to bring up before we get into the lesson proper? Okay, question one, we ask, what was the specific sin that Isaiah begins this chapter with in verses 1 and 2, chapter 10. Jerome? Okay, justice was not done in our court system. Hap, David?
Yeah, they were depriving the poor, oppressing the poor, and it seems to especially, point to the rulers, the ones that were enacting laws. We're just depriving the poor.
Yeah. Yeah, what? Did anybody do any reading on how corrupt this had become? In Israel? Anybody do any study on that? The court systems and those that were in charge, the leaders, remember we read back there in Matthew where it said they would not take a bribe. They could be bought. If you had money or you had some wealth, the hands of justice would swing over in your favor. Much like we hear today, who's got the most money usually wins the argument. And so Israel had gotten so wicked and so corrupt that this was the practice in their court systems. It did not matter who was right or who was wrong. Who come to me with the most favors? And so the officials would collect these bribes and collect this money, and then they would swing the arm of justice in that direction. And so the injustice that was being done to the poor and those that were needy, again, God was very concerned with those people. And it was Israel's place to take care and protect those, but they were doing right the opposite. And so God says enough is enough. Anything else over question one. And question two, what will be their punishment?
Talks about desolation.
Yeah, what is desolation?
Destroyed.
Okay.
They will be humbled.
Yeah, they'll be humbled. Yeah. They're going to lose everything they put their trust and confidence in, aren't they, Susan?
Well, those that were being unjust rulers and lawmakers when they were captive were going to be stripped of all their authority and be under somebody else's rule. That would be unjust for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he'll explain that later on in the chapter when he gets more specific about how they're going to be treated. Bill?
One translation said they'd either be captured or killed.
Yeah, and we know that to be true when you read the accounts that did happen. Yeah, when they were taken captive, there were some that were killed. But
there's a difference in hope in that instance of punishment, because it says that in spite of all of this, sort of all this is going to happen, the captivity, the humbling, the death, God's not going to turn away. He has decided this is going to happen, and he will not stop it.
Yeah. Yeah. And we talked about that a few weeks ago. These are the children of God. These are the chosen people that God selected out of all the nations of the world. And these are my people, but here's what they've done to me. And I've got no choice in the matter. I've got to bring punishment on them. In verse 4, he says, "Without me, they shall bow down among the prisoners, and they shall fall among the slain. For all of this, his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still." And that's back to what Bill was talking about, the slain. Some of them were killed. Some of them were taken prisoners. Some were taken captive. And so because of the way they had mistreated and done others, and because they turned their back on God and forgot His law, God was going to bring this annihilation to them, this desolation as he refers to it. Anything else over question to Richard.
You know, in today, it seems like that you do a favor for somebody and you're taking the thing. And then, time again, while you do another favor for somebody, and you don't get quite the response you did the first time. And then the third or fourth time, you owe it to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah. You talk about the government or brothers
and
sisters, but it's kind of like
what have you done for the relationship? Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's not a word, but people grow worser and worser. The more they do it, the more they expect, and the easier it is to expect it. And then before long, like you said, it's owed to me. Yeah. Nick?
I like the end of verse 4 where it says his hand is outstretched still. It shows that God doesn't change no matter how angry he is. Psalm 37, verse 24 says, well, starting verse 23, it says, the steps of the man are established by the Lord, and when he delights in his way, though he fall, he shall not be cast headlong, for the Lord upholds him with his hand. I have been young, and now I'm old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken, and his children begging for bread. It doesn't matter how angry he is with us, his hand is still there for the righteous to take.
Yeah. Yeah, God is always there wanting us to repent. Always want us to come back. And that's just so hard for us to understand. Somebody just continually takes advantage of us or slaps us. And, you know, we may put up with it for a while, but after a while, it's time to end this. But God's not like that, is he? He's always got that hand stretched out. And you think back all the way back to the very beginning. And I wonder, as I was reading this, I was wondering, you know, does God see that rainbow? As he's sitting there looking down, does he see that rainbow come across? Yeah. He was so mad at us at one time, he was going to wipe everybody out. It was over. You guys have done it. But there was that little glimmer, and few righteous, and so God said, I'll spare you and I'll never do this to you again. And he put that rainbow in the sky for us to see. You just wonder, what does God look down and see that rainbow and remind him, well, let's back off. He's always got that hand stretched out, always wants us to come back. God's not slack concerning his promise. But he wants everyone to repent, come to him. Jeremy had a comment a while ago.
Yeah, as I was studying your lesson here and kind of reading on ahead for Sunday, struck in this book not only with Israel, but with Syria and Babylon, and later on the Medes, we see that how they treated people is returned on their head. Almost the same language is used. So God is certainly telling us something there that, you know, we gotta treat people the way we have to be treated.
Yeah. Yeah. As we sow, so shall we reap. And that's what Susan was talking about a while ago. It'd be justice to them for what they had done. But all three of those questions, and I meant to bring it up a while ago, all three of those questions that God asked Israel, we know the answers to them, and you can see the answers. Yeah. All that treasure and all that pride, all that power and position that they thought they had, it was taken from them. Yeah. Where are you going to show this glory at? Where are you going to hang it? Where are you going to leave it? It's nothing to leave. It was taken away from us. It was all taken away. Mo?
Syria and Babylon didn't say, oh, we're going to kill most of these people, but we're going to leave just a few. If it were up to them, they don't like Israel and Judah.
Yeah.
Only because of God's
death. Yeah. Yeah, and you know, and I was thinking about that when Jerome showed that map the other day. There's just a little sliver in the middle of that map where Israel's at. And all these nations all around in that whole part of the world over there. But because of God, he protected that little sliver. I mean, you can take your little finger and cover it on the map. Yeah. He covered that little sliver with his power. And he kept all those world powers at bay until he said it's time to bring punishment on you. And then he, as we looked in chapters 1 and 2, he tore down the hedge. He tore down the wall around the vineyard. And he allowed that punishment to come in. But at his will, things were pulled back. And they were protected again. And so God is in control. And that's the story that we have to always remember when we're talking about these stories in the Old Testament. God is always in control. And it's at God's will that these things are done. You know, he talks about the punishment that's brought on numerous times. I think of Hebrews 12 and the being chastened as a father. God chastens his children as a father does. And my father believed in the rod. My father believed in popping out bells that come through all the belt loops, you know. God has to bring punishment on his people. It's not a pleasant thing. I don't know how many times I heard him say it's going to hurt me worse than you. And I couldn't see it at the time. But it's a difficult thing to have to punish your children. It's hard. But God has to do it. To be just and to be honest and truthful, he has to do that. And so he's going to chasten us. In verse 5 he says, "And you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as to the sons. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens, and scourges every son whom he receives." And that's why he punished Israel. That's why he punished Judah. Because he loved them. Because he wanted them to come back. And so he used that chastening as the tool to bring them back. And so as we chasten our children to create a better environment for them, God did for his people. Anything else over question 2? Question 3, how is Assyria described here in verse 5? Mo mentioned Assyria a while ago.
It's the rod of my anger. The rod of the Lord's anger.
Okay. Verse 5 says, "Woe to Assyria, the rod of my anger, and the staff in whose hand is my indignation." So Assyria is going to be that instrument. Assyria is going to be that tool that God uses to bring about this punishment. And he calls Assyria the rod that we use. In question 4, after Judah's punishment, what will happen to Assyria? We see that Assyria is going to be used for the punishment. But what's going to happen after God's through it, Sue? Yeah. And what was Assyria's attitude?
Look at what we did.
Yeah. Yeah, you look down through all the verses there. You know, look what I did. Look at my strength. Look at my power. Look at my wisdom. Look at my control. My. But then they find out that God was in control. And God is the all-powerful. Jerome?
Verse 7, there, Mo just mentioned this a couple minutes ago, but when God is using and working through a nation, he doesn't violate their free will. Assyria was just doing what they wanted to do. They were power-hungry and cruel and violent people. And God used what was already in their hearts to accomplish his purpose. And so it's exactly like Pharaoh in the book of Exodus, or Nebuchadnezzar in Ezekiel, or Daniel in Assyria the same way. They think they're doing their own will, but really they're achieving God's purpose.
Right, yeah. And that's what they failed to understand. It's because of God. verse 12. So therefore it shall come to pass when the Lord has performed all his work on Mount Zion and on Jerusalem, that he will say, I will punish the fruit of the arrogant heart of the king of Assyria. And so again, the very same thing that Judah was being brought down for, now Assyria is going to be punished for. The arrogance and the pride. Verse 12 talks about the haughty look. Because he says, by the strength of my hand I have done this. By my wisdom I am more prudent. Also I have removed the boundaries of the people, and I have robbed their treasuries. I have put down the inhabitants like a valiant man. My hand has found like a nest the riches of the people. And as one gathers eggs that are left, I have gathered all the earth. And there was no one moved his wing, nor opened his mouth with even a peep. And so, you know, their arrogance, their pride, their boasting that they were all sufficient. They didn't need God. And God's going to bring them down now. And then he gives kind of a comical show of what their arrogance is as God views it. What were the three things that he used to show how foolish Assyria's pride was?
The axe, the saw, and the club.
Yeah. All three of those things are mighty instruments. You know, before the chainsaw, if you had a sharp axe, you had something. There's no way to bring a tree down. You know, you chop a tree down with a big axe. Very strong tool. The axes that were used in battle, the big broad axes and things. A very, very powerful, mighty tool. And the saw, you know, what work a saw can do. And then the rod in the hand of a person. But he says, shall the axe boast of itself against him who chops with it? Yeah. What gives the axe its strength? Yeah. That axe can sit there all day long against the wall and accomplish nothing. And so how foolish is it for that axe to sit there and talk about how mighty and powerful he is? You know, it's a comical thought. But as far as God's concerned, that's what Assyria did. You're my instrument. And without me, you're nothing. Isn't that what he told Israel? Isn't that what he told Judah? Without me, you'll be punished. You'll be like the prisoners. And you'll fall. So without God, we are nothing. He uses the axe, the saw, and the rod. All three of those. How much bragging can they do without a person's hand with it, Mo?
Remind me of Luke 12, that the rich man was full of himself. And as you said about Syria, they were foolish. So it's good.
I thought back when we talked about in Deuteronomy before they came in into the land, God reminded Judah or Israel, said in Deuteronomy 9 verse 4, says, do not think in your heart after the Lord your God has cast out those before you, saying, because of my righteousness the Lord has brought me in to possess the land. But it's because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord is driving them out and giving you a place to go. And so it's not because you're so great and you deserve all this. They are so wicked, they're going to lose their property. They're going to lose their land. And I'm going to give you this land to possess. You know, the same is true with what he's talking about here with Assyria. It's not because you're so great and mighty and powerful, but I have a purpose for you. I have a need for you right now. And they had everything all twisted around. Anything else over question 4 before we move on? Question 5, how great was going to be the punishment brought upon Assyria? How do you describe it?
I will be able to count the trees.
Yeah. He's going to thin it out, isn't he? You know, you walk into Brown County, probably the biggest woods around here. You walk into a big forest. How many trees are there? Yeah. It's almost an impossible job to count them all. But God says, after I'm done with them, a child can stand there and count. You know, a child can count so far.
Yeah.
But
the emphasis is it's a little child that can count 10 maybe.
Yes, he's not going to have some math wizard standing there counting, is he? They're going to have the calculator. As a little child's going to be able to stand there on the hillside, he's going to be able to count the trees. So he's going to thin it out pretty good. It's going to be quite a defeat, Richard. Yeah, I thought of that too when I was going through the lesson. The fire that went through down there in Brown County itself, when you go through Brown County, you can see parts of that park that where a fire has been, and it really thins it down and takes out a lot of the underbrush. And that's a picture that he paints here. This is how much destruction is going to be brought on Syria for this.
He says also that he will destroy the gorgeous forest and its fruitful garden, both body and soul. And to me, that's saying that the destruction is going to be so great that Assyria won't even have the will to fight on. They will be totally defeated. And they won't have any fight left.
Yeah. Yeah, and I thought about that too when you talk about the soul and body. That's a good point to bring out. That's going to be the measurement of their defeat. Like you said, it's going to take the wind out of their sails. They're not going to be that arrogant people. Jerome?
We can fast forward into history and see how this all pans out. Hezekiah prays to God, the angel of the Lord, in one night destroys 180,000 Assyrian soldiers. And they run back home. So you see part of this verse being fulfilled there in chapter 37.
Right, yeah. Yeah, as we go through this book of 2 Kings, chronicles a lot of these same things and talks about and shows Isaiah come on the scene and then shows the behind the scenes battles that take place. So if you want to do further study and like Jerome was talking about, bearing these things out, 2 Kings 18 and 19 is a couple of good chapters to look at for this particular place in Isaiah. Anybody else? Question 6. What is promised to Israel here in verse 21?
Remnant will return.
Yeah. As he's done several times throughout the book already. He reminds them, this is coming on you. This is what's going to happen. But there's going to be a remnant. There's going to be a faithful remnant come back. There's going to be a returning because God's not done with you yet. Verse 21 says, the remnant will return, the remnant of Jacob, to the mighty God. They're not going to just come back to be home. They're not going to just come back because that's where they live. They're going to come back to God. You know, they've turned their back on God, as we looked at a few lessons ago. That's why they're being punished, because they turned backwards on God. But He's going to bring them down, He's going to humble them, and He's going to bring them to repentance. And they're going to come back to God. And so that's why the remnant's going to be allowed to return, because they have repented and turned and come back to the Holy One. Anything else over question 6? Question 7, what is God telling His people in verse 25? says, for yet a very little while, and the indignation will cease, as will my anger in their destruction. What's God telling his people? Yeah. Yeah. Just for a little while. For a little while. It's not going to be pleasant. It's not going to be easy. But for a little while, and it will pass. And my indignation, my anger will subside. And the remnant will be able to, allowed to come back.
So I got to thinking about that verse, Mike, and what's a little while to God?
Yeah.
And apparently it's a 30-year span between Tiglath-Pileser the Third and Sennacherib. So we should bear that in mind if we're praying and trying to be patient for God to answer prayer, that a little while can be as much as 30 years.
1,000 years is one day. Yeah. Yeah, a little while according to God's watch. Yeah. Good point.
Okay, this is another way that he was speaking of the remnant. That little while, there will be people that are going to live through this. They're going to come through it. And he's telling us just a while. We won't all be killed. It's going to be a lifetime. Everyone will suffer.
Yeah.
We won't all die.
Did you look at verse 24 and really read it? Who's talking in verse 24? God. Verse 24 says, therefore, thus says the Lord God of hosts, O my people who dwell in Zion, do not be afraid of the Assyrian. He shall strike you with a rod, and lift up his staff against you in the manner of Egypt. Yeah. God, he doesn't want to do this. He doesn't want to have to do this. You can see the love of a father for his children. But because of your sin, but because of what you've done, I've got to do this. But he says, don't be afraid of Assyria. Yeah, it's going to be rough on you. It's going to be hard. But then in a very little while, the indignation will cease. Yeah, it's going to be short-lived. Yeah, and then it's going to be over. So you can see the outreached hand of God wanting his people to come back, wanting his people to return. Anything else over question 7? Question 8 says, how is the rod described here in chapter 11, verses 1 through 5? We talked earlier about the rod being that of Christ. What are some of the descriptions?
Stem, branch, root.
Okay, refers to him as a branch. Branch coming out of the roots. A rod, a stem.
Verse 4 talks about the rod of his mouth. And with the breath of his lips, he will slay the wicked. So, I think that's talking about, you know, Jesus, through his words, was able to accomplish so much.
Okay. Yeah. 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 I thought it was interesting that how specific Isaiah is. Yeah. He's not just talking about a forest out here, just any root pops up a branch. But this branch is going to come from the lineage of Jesse. Who is Jesse?
David's father.
David's father. So from the throne of David is going to come this rod. So very specific where it's coming from. and who's going to be its father. And so he points out exactly who this root's going to be. How did he describe him in verses 2 and 3?
Spirit differently. Spirit of the Lord, spirit of wisdom, understanding, spirit of counsel, and strength.
Yeah. So, Susan?
Stand out too that when calling a serious that those are things that like are removed from the tree and will die, and this is a living shoot with roots, but there's fruit, and it's very different than that rod that God used to punish.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a living branch that's going to come up. It's not that dead twig that Dad used to take his pocket knife and slice off the tree to use as that rod. This is going to be a living rod. It's going to be talking about Jesus. But I thought it was interesting, verse 2, you look at the contrast of Israel and Judah's leaders and the kind of character that they were. But here's who our new leader's going to be. He's going to be one with the Spirit of the Lord on him. He's going to have a spirit of wisdom and understanding. He's going to have a spirit of counseling and mighty. He's going to be strong. A spirit of knowledge. He's going to be somebody that fears God. He's going to be somebody that delights in the fear of God. He's not going to judge by sight. He's not going to judge by how much money you got in your pocket and how poor are you. He's going to judge a righteous judgment. It doesn't matter to him who's got the most money, who's right, and who's been wrong. So this is going to be our new leader. And so he shows the promise of this. Down in verse 6, what is it that Isaiah is describing here in verse 6 through 9? Talk about the wolf will dwell with the lamb, the leopard will lie down with the goat, calf with the young lion. What's he showing?
Kingdom of peace.
Yeah. Now, our religious world, they even some of the songs that come out, they talk about this is what they're looking forward to. You know, when they can actually take these animals and put them together. But it's the new kingdom. It's going to be a kingdom of peace. It's not going to be a kingdom like the Old Testament kingdom. One where you just walk in and whoever's left standing wins. It's a violent kingdom in the Old Testament. But this is going to be a kingdom of peace, Linda.
As I was reading that, I just kept thinking of chapter 9 and verse 13 when it talks about the governor will rest on his shoulders and his name will be called one. My God, eternal Father, Prince of Peace. This chapter is expanding on all those things that God will be called, that Christ will be called. This is why he will be called that. And it's describing those names.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then we get on into chapter 12, short chapter there, after the punishment, after God is through, then you see the attitude of Judah. It's a chapter 12 is a chapter of praise of God, praising God for the salvation that He's given to them, a change of heart, changing of their will. They understand now who God really is, and so we see the from one extreme to the other in these three chapters. Appreciate all your comments.